Litcast Slovakia, the podcast about Slovak literature in English. Welcome to Litcast Slovakia. My name is Julia Sherwood, and my guest today for this 23rd episode is Ivana Hostová. Ivana is a Slovak literature scholar at the Institute of Slovak Literature of the Slovak Academy of Sciences. In her research, she focuses on Slovak poetry and poetry in translation. She also translates, mainly unconventional writing. Ivana has gained a PhD on the translations of Sylvia Plath into Slovak and Mila Haugová's poetry, written two books and numerous reviews and papers on poetry and translation, and edited and co-edited several volumes on literature and translation. Hello, Ivana. Welcome to Litka Slovakia. I hope you're keeping well.
Hello, Julia. Thank you for inviting me and for your introduction.
Your translation-related research covers many fascinating subjects. So let's start with a book you have edited, Identity and Translation Trouble. This includes essays on post-communist translation practices, on the role that politics played during state socialism in the translation of fiction, and the subversive role that imported fiction played in that period. What changes has translation practice undergone since those days, and what are the latest trends?
Yes, the volume came out in 2017, and I was happy to be able to collaborate on it with a great group of authors like Michael Cronin, from Trinity College in Dublin, Lada Kolomiec from Ukraine, Taras Shevchenko University, and also Eva Palkovichova from Comenius University, who was the one who discussed the history of Slovak translation of Hispanic American fiction in the socialist era when these translations were a transformative force and influenced the original fiction as well. As it very often happens in totalitarian regimes. Well, contemporary situation is to a certain extent still a kind of a product of what was happening in the 1990s. So just after the totalitarian regime collapsed in 1989 in Slovakia, the situation in the literary field, the whole society, of course, was very dynamic and chaotic, of course. So there were the large state-controlled publishing houses stopped functioning, were reduced in size, small publishers emerged, and all these struggled with finding new ways of financing. So these needed to adapt to the market economy and consumer culture, kind of. What was the major change? Is the source languages changed pretty much? Because if we take a look at the numbers, last year Lubica Plešovská and Natalia Popolcová-Glovatsky gave a comprehensive overview. And when we look at that, in 1989, more than half of the production of book production translations, to be precise, was from Russian. So almost 50% of all production of translations in Slovakia are translations of American literature nowadays. And half of these, or more than half of these, are purely commercial. They are contemporary romances and suspense fiction. So when we compare it to, for example, poetry, that represents less than 1% of the whole production. So I'm mentioning these numbers just to illustrate the overall situation so that we can imagine what it looks like. And also, one has to take into account that I don't have exact numbers at hand right now, but out of all publishing outputs in Slovak, certainly more than half are translations. So translation or translated literature does play a major role in shaping our present, our culture and language, but it's not always kind of aesthetically demanding so-called artistic literature. But to return to the changing publishing conditions, which of course are crucial to the existence of translations, the sudden lack of planning on the national level and the changing of the mechanisms of state support for book production was obviously a great shock. What happened is that enthusiasts and entrepreneurs founded hundreds of presses with varying agendas and varying sizes of output. And well, most of this production was and still is driven by market demands. But to come to the literature we're probably more interested in, those who wish to publish literature based on its aesthetic value, not audience size, had to seek other sources of financing. And well, in the 1990s, it was rather difficult if there were non-commercial publishers because the regime of the so-called Mečiarism, which was verging on a new totalitarian, was kind of a reserved financing of literature and culture for those who supported the state ideology, to say it very crudely. So independent publishers turned to various international organizations or foundations and so on. But since the late 1990s, and now we're getting to the present slowly, the system of distributing subsidies became more open and favorable. And in 2015, the new Slovak Arts Council was established. However, it is still not enough for very systematic publishing of translations, especially of poetry, and but in many cases also for fiction. I mean, so much of the work and effort really lies with small publishers or with translators who are also serve as agents who choose the work for translating. And sometimes, even from what I know, also negotiate the copyrights and so on. But my main field is poetry. So publishing poetry in translation, even in translation-dominated culture such as Slovak culture has become a demanding and quite unprofitable enterprise. Especially when it comes to contemporary or innovative poetry. So even within the circle of professional readers, it is a kind of marginal genre. So this is the situation. But well, generally many people active in the field of translation and translation studies and comparative literature are of the opinion that translation and selection and the whole process of editing and so on was on a more professional level during the state socialism. So, but well, that's one side of the thing. Of course, the other one is that there was no freedom of choice really. So that concerned mainly classics. But currently, of course, there are quite a few engaged publishers and translators who do make efforts to be acquainted with what is going on in the world literature and also in individual national literatures. And there are quite a few admirable projects and initiatives we can be really happy about.
So thank you for this really comprehensive overview of translations of poetry and translations in general into Slovak. But you've also done a lot of research that goes in the other direction. And when we first met in September 2015 at a conference in Bristol on translating the literature of small European nations, You gave a talk on translations of Slovak poetry into English, and since then you have done more research on this subject. So, looking at the quantity of Slovak poetry in English, I think we could be quite proud. What are the latest figures by your count?
As my research shows, or from what I found out, during the past 3 decades, Slovak poems in English translation appeared in more than 100 volumes and amount to no less than 2,500 poems by some 150 authors and 50 translators. I don't know if you want me to talk about this a bit more.
I'm just staggered by this figure, but maybe numbers are one part of the story, but maybe we should focus on the quality of the translation. And also, I think I'd be really interested to hear more about the different routes that Slovak poetry has taken into English translation, because that's something you have studied. At that Bristol conference, Czech literature scholar Ondřej Vimr introduced the term supply-driven translation. That is translation that compensates for the lack of demand in the target culture. And I think some of it is probably also the case in Slovakia. And the Slovene literature scholar and translator Olivia Halliwell has since done some interesting research into supply-driven translation of Slovene literature. And she has identified three drivers of such translations: institutional, personal, and academic. You have also identified three types of agenda driving this project, but they're slightly different from Olivia's. So could you talk us through them?
I'll try to be brief. The three agendas that I identified from that corpus I mentioned, like this 2,500 poems and 100 volumes, were individual self-promotional agenda. Second one was export-oriented national projects, and a third agenda was, or the third group of projects encompassed international ones, international endeavors. The first group are typically these are typically solitary efforts. They can be handed out in various meetings, literary events, or cultural, even political, social gatherings. It's a prototypical space where they are distributed, and they, as a rule, reach a very small audience and function as promotional material. Gifts, or just happened to exist because the author was had the wish to self-translate and often also self-publish his or her poems. So this is kind of outsider projects, or to a certain extent, in some cases, of course. So the second group aims at these are the these national projects, export-oriented national projects. These aim at promotion of the national literature and are potentially more successful in permeating into the target culture. And mainly because the joint efforts of individuals and institutions make it into a quality product, or the there are possibilities to make it a quality product. An example of these is a very well prepared anthology of Slovak literature of the 20th century, 100 years of Slovak literature, which I checked before the interview is out of print, but available in at least 20 libraries over the world, so it is accessible. And the third group, these are the most successful projects, and they are able to attract the greatest amount of attention. And they usually combine national, international, and transnational actors, translators, editors, publishers, and so on. And I can mention, for example, Mila Haugová, that was that has had two selections of her poetry published in the translation of James Sutherland Smith with his co-translators, which who vary There were two. Currently, I hope there will soon be also Ivan Štrbka published. He was spoken about in one of the previous podcasts, I think.
Yes, I very much hope so. I know that John Minahane has translated a collection of his poetry, but as far as that last time I heard, he hadn't found a publisher, but I do hope that changes. And another poet that actually hasn't been mentioned very much in our podcast is Nora Ružičková. She's someone you have written about and also translated. So can you tell us a little bit about her work?
Of course, she is a key poet of the generation that made their debuts in the 1990s. This was the generation that recreated the autonomous field of Slovak literature in a way after the state-controlled environment changed into what it is now. So her work is deeply immersed in various media, and she has a background in the visual arts, which, unlike literature, have the great advantage of not being seen as identity bearers and are therefore more liberated. So her projects range from text-based poetry in the sense of creative writing, through sound poetry, conceptual poetry. She also holds has exhibitions and performances in galleries and festivals. She often collaborates with other artists and other translators, critics, and so on. But most often with Mariana Mlynarčíková, who's also a visual artist. Nora merges research procedures with institutional critique and post-conceptual methods or conceptual methods, but not just that, of course. She was also one of the first women poets to enter the male-dominated experimental part of the literary field in the 1990s. And she's been inspired by feminism and deconstruction, and she's also a translator from German. So her first book of poetry, Mikronauti or Micronauts, came out in 1998 and combined her interest in the visual arts, feminisms, and poetry with an accent on the speaking persona's self-scrutiny. And she kind of investigated the speaking subject or through the subject, investigated the world, language, and so on. Her second book, Osnova a útok, Warp and Weft, tackles the relationship between text, body, and textile. And her later projects continued in these traces, but at the same time open to more conceptual approaches, and are often, especially recently, part of a series. So, for example, that can be an exhibition, often interactive. Within a book, a performance by actors, performance can be filmed or photo documented and then published as a pamphlet with a commentary and so on. As an example of her recent work, I can mention her book ABC, which she co-authored with Mariana Mlynarčíková. The book investigates the relationships between the visual culture, power, and capitalist mechanisms of commodification, also uses the technique of fragmentation and objectification of the always already mediated experience of the world. These appropriated textual fragments are montaged into a kind of devisualized Debordian film. It's a kind of stroboscope, but a series of lighter and darker textual synapses that make visible the what we commonly do not see or do not pay attention to. It's usually structural violence, or very often it is. This is certainly a book I would love to see in English translation.
I hope that we can include links to some of the poetry of hers that has been translated into English by yourself and maybe by someone else. Or are you the only person so far to have translated her into English?
There have been translations. I'm not quite sure how really available they are. I mean, if they can be get to, but there certainly have been more translations.
Great. We'll try and find them and include the links in the notes to this podcast. And so, moving on to another poet and a prose writer who's been your regular collaborator and whom you've translated, Peter Maciowski. We discussed his novel, Mikać Kostliusami, Making Skeletons Dance, in an earlier podcast with John Minahane. But we haven't really talked about his poetry yet. So, can you characterize his poetic output?
Well, his poetry has always been subversive and critical. That's probably a thing to start with, both in form and motives. And it's been critical and subversive towards all sorts of institutions and preconceived ideas, in the sense of institutional critique, but also in the sense of criticizing stereotypes of all sorts. What is also specific for his poetry is that it is written from a position of an intellectual with a mixed identity with respect to Slovak literature and culture. He's a Slovak Hungarian who's been living outside of Slovakia for more than a decade now. So he has the advantage of a critical distance, and his writing is always in an intense dialogue with other poetries as well, especially Hungarian and American. But he also widely reads, also translates, and works with other literatures, Brazilian, Chinese, all sorts of marginalized or half-forgotten classics. And as well as, of course, contemporary critical theory. So all this very exciting mix of inspirations. His conceptual techniques evoke also ancient ways of texting, and he also pointed this out in one of his books in an afterword. So because what can in a certain milieu be seen as innovative might as well be a variation of, let's say, medieval procedure. another thing that is interesting about his writing is that he uses translation as one of his authorial methods. So he blurs lines between the original and appropriated, authorial and translational, and so on. I can mention one of his more recent collections, Santa Panica, which is a kind of verbal enactment of a fractal, but not it's not a mechanical following of the procedure. It combines conscious and intuitive selective process with this method. The collection can be thought of as a slowly disintegrating fractal whose parts gradually become the soil for the subsequent growth of the text. So it's very exciting as to the form he used. He uses a phrase from a book on karma as a seminal point for this collection. And the further growth of the text can be paralleled with the development of a Homeritic system, so it's very organic in a way. And the regular pattern of the first part of the collection is broken by the intrusion of poems partly springing from the corresponding paragraphs and partly infected by a parasitic element of panic. So it's the title of the collection, Santa Panica. Both as an intruding lexeme and as a characteristic of the composition. This irregularity behaves both as an intruder and paradoxically also as a kind of order reinforcing mantra. So the form is extremely interesting and inspiring, the sense of switching between perceiving the abstract patterns and their dissolution and the very concrete images and very also emotions.
Sounds absolutely fascinating, and this blurring of lines between identities and styles and sources of inspiration, really quite fascinating. And in a way, it actually takes me to my final question, which is that one of the things that has really cheered me up in these weird COVID times have been your posts on Facebook. These little snippets that you post in a variety of languages, and they're often are very absurd juxtapositions which speak to these strange times we live in, and they actually have a strange kind of poetry. So are these, where do they come from? Are they excerpts from translations you're working on, or random things you come across in your readings? Can you enlighten us, and also tell us what you're working on at the moment?
Yes, thank you. I'm happy. The function of my snippets was fulfilled, because the main function of these posts is to keep or to try to preserve some kind of sanity in this time of extreme isolation. So virtually connect with the world. But to answer your question, there are excerpts from all sorts of texts I came across during researching of one topic or another, but also from translations. Also, there are some of them are my thoughts that go on in my head, and there's no one to tell. So I tell my social media account. But at the same time, all the time I was doing that, I was also thinking about what the British poet Maggie O'Sullivan said in one of the interviews, that she collects language, she collects fragments of overheard phrases and fragments of words even. And I think that in this way, we are all collectors. So my collection is visible and published in this very outsider way. But a large part of those quotations you probably noticed were from a book I was translating recently, and it's The Collector by John Fowles, which is coincidentally the narrative is about a girl held captive. So it resonated with the present situation. But what was admirable about that character was her will to live. And despite the harsh conditions, despite her questioning her own identity and abilities. So that's probably a positive message for all of us in these times.
Certainly is, and thank you very much for sharing these your collections of language and fragments, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck with everything, with keeping your sanity, especially. We all need that.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.